He is about to come into great success. We talked about the fact that he is a model to learn from when it comes to how to handle success. He never let it go to his head. We discussed last week how sometimes in our lives, success is harder to handle than hard times. Hard times, we might hit our knees, might turn to God, but success, a lot of times, will go to our head and cause us to not handle it very well. Sometimes people consider this Joseph's big break. You know, a lot of times in our lives, we're looking for our big break, and Joseph did get his big break here. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But this is Joseph's big break. So let's go back to the text and we will get into it. Again, if you've been in church for any length of time, very familiar story. But hopefully there's some lessons that we can learn from. It says, then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. Behold, he stood by the river. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat. And they fed in the meadow. And behold, seven other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking cows. So Pharaoh awoke. He slept and dreamed a second time. And suddenly 7 heads of grain came up on one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And after the 7 thin heads devoured the plump and full heads, so Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all of its wise men, and Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. So we see that 2 full years had passed since Joseph had interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker. Now Pharaoh has this dream. We talked about the fact that this dream was weird, that cows were eating cows. Cows never eat meat. Cows always eat plants. So again, that is a weird thing. These ears of corn that came up, or heads of grain, I should say, came up, and then this east wind came in. In the Bible, in your Old Testament Bible, the east wind always brought about bad things, didn't it? When Job's family was killed, I think it was the east wind that came when Jonah refused to go to Nineveh, and then he finally did, and God caused the gourd to grow up and shade him. What caused it to die? A strong east wind. When the locust came in, one of the 10 plagues, what brought him in? A strong east wind. Over and over again in the Bible, the east wind brought bad things, and here in this dream, it brought bad things. I want you to notice something about this. There's 2 dreams. Is there any significance in that? We're studying Revelation on Wednesday night, and I'm teaching it in here, and we've talked about the significance of number. The number 2 stands for what? Confirmation, right? 2 is always for confirmation. And even think back to Joseph's life when he was still at home, and the thing that caused his brothers to hate him the worst, what did he have? 2 dreams, right? He had 2 dreams, and their sheaves bowed down to his sheaves, and then he had another dream, the sun and the moon and 11 stars, they bowed down to him. So again, it's just like Joseph's dream. Even when he was in prison, there was 2 dreams, right? The butler had one, the baker had one. All of these things are from God as a confirmation. We're going to see that a little bit later, but the number 2 is significant in that sense. So Pharaoh wakes up. The Egyptians, they believe strongly in dreams. They believe that they were signs of what was to come. So he calls his magicians and his wise men. Now, did these magicians have any power? Well, when Moses went before Pharaoh later, another different Pharaoh, and could they do some of the same tricks he did? When the 10 plagues come, could they do some of the same things that? So they had some power. How did that work? I don't know. I don't understand it. It's a different time. We don't live in that time now. But he called these guys, these magicians, he called the wise men. Who are the wise men? They're the most intelligent people in the land of Egypt, people that have studied and studied. And more than likely, since they believe so highly in dreams, it was people that had spent their life dedicated to the study of these dreams to try to figure out what was going on. So Pharaoh, he really wants to know what's happening, but nobody knows. Nobody understands it. Now, you and I read this, and we know the end story. And so we look at him and we think, oh, that's obvious what it is. You know, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. But if you didn't know the end story already, you would wonder too, right? You'd wonder too. So Pharaoh, he's wanting to know. Verse 9 says, then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, And he said, I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servant and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass just as he has interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. So the thing that Joseph had asked as a favor when he interpreted that dream, 3 days later, the butler's restored to his place, and he conveniently forgets. And now, 2 years later, his memory has been jogged. And he figures out what it is, and at least he did remember at this point. At least he remembered, and the things that he told Pharaoh were absolutely true. Joseph interpreted our dream down to the minute detail. And if you remember when Joseph was interpreting the dreams, even when it came to the baker, it was very precise and not very pleasing of a dream to interpret. But he told him, you know, the butler, you're going to lose your head and birds are going to come and all these horrible things. And the butler remembered all that. He says, hey, just like he said it was going to happen, it happened. And he was a Hebrew. He was a servant of the captain of the guard, and he was put in that prison, you know. But one thing that the butler didn't do, when Joseph asked him to remember him before Pharaoh, he asked him to also remember that he was wrongly in prison and that he had done nothing wrong deserving of being there. Well, the butler doesn't mention that, does he? All that jogged his memory was, hey, Pharaoh's had a dream, and I know somebody can interpret dreams. And ultimately, that's all that's going to matter to get Joseph out. But if you were wrongly in prison, you want to be justified, right? You want to, you know, be declared innocent that you didn't do anything wrong to be there to start with, but Joseph's not going to get that. But he's going to get out anyways. And ultimately, I suppose that's the main thing. It says, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved and changed his clothes and came to Pharaoh. Everything that I read talked about the fact that to an Egyptian, a beard was something that they did not want. They didn't want in their presence. They wanted a clean, shaven face. And if you've been in prison for several years, you probably look pretty rough, don't you? I'd say so. I'd say you're not very clean. You're not very sanitary. I'd say your hair and your beard and what all doesn't look very good. So before he could come before Pharaoh, he's got to get shaved. You don't come to the Egyptian Pharaoh with facial hair. You've got to change your clothes. You've got to look presentable. So he comes, he stands before Pharaoh. Verse 15, Pharaoh says to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. I want you to notice, Pharaoh is saying, hey, I've heard about you, Joseph. I've heard that you have the ability to interpret a dream. Could Joseph have taken advantage of this situation? If somebody thinks that you have some power within you to do some magnificent thing, and this person that thinks this is the leader of the world, could you have taken advantage? You could say, yeah, I've got the power to do that, and I can, you know, I can do this for you, and hey, if you will give me this in return, I'll gladly offer my services. And Joseph could have taken advantage of it. And probably 99% of us would have done what? Taken advantage of it. We would want something for ourselves. You know, we would at least ask to clear our name. We would have had a list of demands, right? Yeah, I'll do it, but this is what I'll do it for. But look at what Joseph said. Joseph answered Pharaoh, and he said, it is not in me. You are saying that I'm come before you, and you've heard that I have this ability. He says, that's not true. It's not in me. He says, God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. You know, Michael said this morning, our purpose in life and our purpose in worship and everything we do should be to glorify God. Here's a prime example, isn't it? He didn't take any credit for himself. He simply wanted to glorify God and gave him all the credit. And as for us as individuals, the abilities that we have, why do we have those abilities? God gave them to us, right? And we'd do well to remember that. You know, Joseph is a good example for us. Don't ever think what you can do is simply because of yourself. I have heard media ask these athletes before, what percentage of what you can do is God-given ability, and what is it hard work? And usually they'll say, oh, it's just hard work. You know, and I've, you know, over and over again, I've done this. and they don't give God the glory. Listen, if you are one of those professional athletes, it's because God has given you the ability to be able to do those things. And people would do well to remember that. And Joseph knew he couldn't interpret a dream on his own. It's because God had to help him. God had to give it to him. All right, it says, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream, I stood on the bank. And I know we've already read this, but he's going to add some things to it. He's going to tell Joseph the dream in more detail. He says, I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly, seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. What river did they come up out of? What was the famous river in Egypt? Nile, right? I mean, this is going to be turned to blood later on. I mean, this is an Egyptian dream, and these meadows and the river bottoms and all of that. He says, they came up, they fed in the meadow. Then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt. The word gaunt simply means thin. Such ugliness, Pharaoh says, as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. But here's the difference. He says, when they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. You know, I even mentioned that just passingly last week. You know, even if a cow could eat another cow today, it would be fat and plump after it ate that much, right? So this dream was puzzling to Pharaoh. He couldn't understand why they're eating all of these things, but they're not growing at all. He says, so I awoke. Also, I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full and good. Then behold, seven heads, withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. You know, if I tried to put myself, and this is something I try to do a lot of times with just everything in life, you put yourselves in somebody else's shoes, you had that dream, you'd be in the same shape, wouldn't you? You'd be like, what in the world, you know, am I dreaming this for? You ever have some dreams that has you wondering why you dreamed it? I'm sure we all do from time to time, right? And Pharaoh, he just can't figure this out. I mean, this is a weird, weird dream. And apparently this was a very vivid dream. You know, a lot of times we have a weird dream, and then the next day we can't tell you what it was about. We know we had a dream, and it was weird. He knows every detail. And the more he tells it, he knows more details. All right, verse 23. It says, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. Pharaoh, you had two dreams, but it's just one, really. It's one message. He says, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. God, in showing Pharaoh what he's about to do, is that anything less than grace? No, times are about to get hard in Egypt, aren't they? Times are about to get very hard. And God, in his infinite mercy and grace and kindness and love and all of that, he is going to show Pharaoh beforehand what's about to happen. Now, God has a greater purpose in mind, and that greater purpose was revealed to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 and 14. God told Abraham, your descendants are going to be strangers in a land. And they're going to be strangers in that land for about 400 years. And then I'm going to bring them out with a mighty hand, and I'm going to punish that land for all the things that they did. So God had told Abraham hundreds of years earlier all of this was going to happen. And here it is. God is bringing it to pass. God has a perfect plan for his people. And in order to get his people to Egypt, these 14 years have to come to pass that Pharaoh has dreamed about. This has to happen because all of this is God's providential hand working in tandem with people to get those 12 sons of Jacob down into Egypt. And those 12 sons are going to come in there, and they're going to multiply and multiply and multiply. And in those 430 years, they're going to come out as several million people. And God did that for several purposes that we've talked about. One was to keep his people pure. The Egyptians didn't like shepherds. Hebrews were shepherds, so they were going to be set apart, put separate place in Goshen in Egypt, and they would be allowed to grow and come together there. Also, it was going to be for protection. You know, if you are living under the world power of Egypt, nobody's coming in and attacking you because Egypt's going to protect you. And then later, when they get big enough, God's going to bring them out with a mighty hand. So this dream is essential into getting all of this to take place. All right, so he begins to interpret the dream, verse 26. It says, the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. The seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following it, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God and God will shortly bring it to pass. We talked about that number two. And Joseph is telling Pharaoh that, hey, when God repeats something twice, it's for confirmation. God is going to do exactly what he said, and God allowed you to have two different dreams that have one meaning to let you know absolutely that this thing is confirmed, that it's going to happen. But can you imagine if God had not revealed this dream beforehand unto Pharaoh? 7 years of plenty, when things, you guys have had really good times in your life, right? You know, if you've got good times in your life, a lot of times you think it's going to always be that way, right? Can you imagine having 7 years of plenty in which everything that you have is overflowing, and then followed by 7 years that's going to eat up everything that you even thought about having those first 7 good years? That it's so severe that it's going to deplete the land and people are going to be begging and pleading for food? What if God had not revealed that? What would have happened? Those 7 years of plenty, what would they have done? They would eat like kings, right? They would have lived it up. They would have partied. They would have invited people. They would have shown it off. They would have done everything they could do to please themselves. And in the 7 years of famine come, what would have happened? They'd have starved to death, wouldn't they? They would have starved to death. So you see, God is being extremely merciful and gracious. And he's doing this, you know, showing that mercy and grace, not just for his people. Were the Egyptians his people? Were they going to benefit from it? Yes, sir. God has his own timing, doesn't he? God knows what's going to happen. That's the problem with us is we think we know, you know, how everything and when everything should happen. We don't know what happens tomorrow, do we? The one that we serve knows what tomorrow is, and that's why, now listen, I'm going to tell you, it's hard to trust that, isn't it? It's very hard to trust that. Some of you say, no, it's easy to trust God. No, it's not easy to trust God. It's hard because we are very in control people, aren't we? We want to know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. We like to feel like we're in control. When it comes to reality, we're not in control of much. We're not in control of much of anything. But here, God is gracious enough to let them know what's going to happen. Therefore, they can prepare beforehand. So, Joseph has interpreted the dream, and that's all Pharaoh asked of him, right? Actually, when you get to this verse that we just read, verse 32, Joseph could have just been quiet, couldn't he? That's not the man that he was. You know, sometimes in the church, here's what we do. And this happened to me several years ago. I was teaching a class at Zion. And I was teaching a class, and this young man raised his hand. He was a teenager. And he says, you know, sometimes preachers or teachers, they stand up and they tell us all these things are wrong and all these things that, you know, we need to do, but they don't give us a solution to fix the problem. And he says, I struggle with that. And isn't that true? Sometimes do we stand up and we present a lesson and we tell you what's wrong and we tell you all of these things but we don't present a solution to the problem? Joseph could have done that, right? Hey, Pharaoh, here's what God said. God says it's going to be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. God's revealed this unto you so you know that it's going to happen. He could have sat down, got out of jail. Everything would have been fine. But that's not how he operated. Joseph is a leader. Joseph is a man that's wanting to stand up and to try to help people. So therefore, he is going to give a solution to the problem. He didn't stop. He didn't stop at just telling somebody what it was they needed to hear. And you and I, we can't just stop at telling somebody what they need to hear. We need to offer them a solution. Anytime we're trying to teach somebody, anytime we're trying to help somebody, offer them a solution. Joseph's got a solution. He says, now therefore, because of what I just said, Pharaoh, he says, let Pharaoh select a discerning and a wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh. And let them keep food in the cities. Then that food will be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt. And the land may not perish during the famine. You think Joseph was thinking about himself here? I have no way to know that, do you? He didn't say, hey, Pharaoh, I'd be the man for the job. He just says, Pharaoh, here's the solution to the problem. You have to select somebody. Even today, does somebody have to lead in anything that we do? I don't like being a leader. You might. I don't like being a leader because there's, you know, a lot of responsibility, a lot of critique, a lot of whatever there is. It's just, you know how it is. It's just the way it is. Somebody has to step up and lead. Anything that we're going to do at Willow Avenue, somebody's got to lead that, whatever it is. And so somebody's got to be willing to stand up and to take that challenge. Joseph tells Pharaoh, you have to find somebody to be a leader. Somebody has to have some wisdom. Somebody's got to take 20% of everything that we harvest over the next 7 years, and we've got to put it up. And archaeologists have discovered these giant storehouses in Egypt. And no doubt where they came from, right? These 7 years that are right here. And he says, if you don't do this, the land's done for. The only way we're going to be saved is you've got to put somebody in charge. And somebody has got to make some good decisions. A leader was needed. Joseph was born to be a leader. God had put it within him. And we talked about this last week. His ability, his talent was to lead. We are never told anywhere of Joseph, you know, talking to somebody about his faith and trying to get somebody to be a Christian. And I'm not saying that he didn't do that, but God put him in a different role. And his role was to do this, and his role fulfilled the purpose of God. And your role may be whatever it is, but do it to the best of your ability and fulfill your purpose for God. But you've got to find that role, and Joseph was willing to do that. He gave that solution that we've got to give too. All right, verse 37, so the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants. Pharaoh heard what he said. And perhaps that he paid extra attention to what he says because he's got a witness backing him up. Hey, this guy interpreted dreams of two people. Two people, that's confirmation again. And exactly both of them came true. And he knows exactly what this dream means. And he even offers a wise solution to the problem. And Pharaoh takes heed. Bible says it seemed good in the eyes of Pharaoh, but I drew a box for an and in the eyes of all of his servants. Nobody's standing up and saying, hey, you know, I want the job. No, that's not what they were doing. These Egyptians really believed in dreams, and they took heed to what Joseph said. Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, as a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Do you think that Pharaoh really was concerned that Joseph was a man of God, or was Pharaoh more concerned with Joseph had a solution to the problem? I'm far convinced it was the latter. Pharaoh needed a solution to the problem, right? Joseph's God wasn't really Pharaoh's concern. Never was Pharaoh's concern, and that's okay. You know, he has the right to do that, but Joseph was a solution to Egypt's problem, and Pharaoh realizes that. Wherever he gets his wisdom, Pharaoh just is glad that he got it. It says, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Isn't it a long journey that Joseph has been on? And Toby kind of mentioned it. You know, and I did a lesson here one time on providence. Every decision, every action that was taken happened in the exact right time to bring Joseph to right here. Everything down to the most minute detail. And the only miraculous thing in the whole story is these dreams and the interpretations. That's it. God didn't step in and make people do things to get it here. Just the dreams and the interpretations. And that's it. But God has worked it out perfectly to Joseph is second in command now of the world, really. Pharaoh's the world power. He's the second most powerful man in the world. And God brought him there. God brought him there without forcing anybody to do anything against their will. God is powerful. God works. And Joseph is a prime example. Proverbs 22, verse 29. Proverbs 22, 29. The Bible says a man that is skillful in his work, he'll stand before kings. If you are good at what you do and you are willing to work at what you do, the Bible says you will be successful in what you do. Joseph was good at what he did, wasn't he? He was a good leader. He's been a leader all his life. And he was willing to work at being a leader. Even today, as just people in society, if you are good at what you do and you will work at what you do, you will succeed at what you do. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. Always does, doesn't it? That's a biblical principle, and it worked for Joseph. It'll work for you too. So hone your talents and work hard at it and be good at it, and I promise you, you'll succeed. So again, he is, other than the throne, Joseph's the man. All right, verse 42. He wants to make this official. Pharaoh took off his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. That signet ring was an important part of being a leader. If any kind of order was going to be sent out, what did it have to have? That signet ring had to stamp it, didn't it? And that let them know where that order came from, so it was official. So it was the official seal of the king of Egypt. And if Joseph's going to be the man in charge, he's got to have that. So the first order of business, get him a signet ring. Second order of business, he be clothed in garments of fine linen. If he's going to be a leader, he's got to look like a leader, right? You know, even today, do people look like leaders? Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you can tell. We've talked about that before. Even when his coat of many colors, many years ago, a lot of times we said a coat with sleeves during that time period represented authority, just like maybe a white hard hat on the job site would represent the man that's in charge. And Joseph needs to look like a leader. Going to put a gold chain around his neck. Going to have him to ride in the second chariot. Ride in the second chariot. Pharaoh's in the first one, right? He's in the head chariot, but right behind him, well, that's the second in command man. And now he wants everybody to know it. So no doubt there's this huge parade. And as they're going down the road, they cried, "Bow the knee." Why do I cry, "Bow the knee"? Well, that's a show of respect and reverence, to show that you are submitting yourself to his authority. God said that we're all going to bow the knee before Jesus, right? Why? Because everybody's going to show their respect for his authority. And the same is true here of Joseph, just in a smaller sense. They cried out, "Bow your knee. Submit yourself to his authority." As a child of God, bow the knee, we submit ourselves to his authority. All right. So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in the land of Egypt." Wow. That's power, isn't it? He says, "I'm Pharaoh, and I am giving you charge. You can't even raise your hand or your foot without Joseph's consent." That's power. That's making sure that people know that this is a serious thing. He says, "And Pharaoh called Joseph's name." I ain't going to pretend to pronounce that. Really doesn't matter. He gave him an Egyptian name. If you're going to be second in command of Egypt, you're probably not going to be called Joseph, right? You know, when we go into certain lands, you expect the name to sound like where you're at. So he needed an Egyptian name. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. They dressed him in Egyptian clothing and Egyptian, the fine linen and the gold and everything that he did. They're turning him into an Egyptian. And in essence, that's what he is, right? In essence, that's what he is. He is becoming an Egyptian. Also, he says he gave him as a wife an Egyptian wife. Again, not going to pretend to pronounce the names. But, you know, some people have said, well, now listen, you've been studying through Genesis, and God's people aren't supposed to marry these other people that are not God's people. Well, let me ask you this. Where in the world is Joseph going to get a wife? Is God a reasonable God? He's going to get a wife in Egypt. He's second in command of Egypt. Who are you going to marry? You're going to marry somebody from around here, right? From these parts. And listen, what they're doing is they are turning Joseph into an Egyptian. Because if God wants these people to follow him and to do what he says, what's he got to be? He's got to be like them. He's got to look like them. He's got to be married like them. He has to be one of them. Now, he's going to still be a servant of God, but he's going to look like them. And we need to realize that. And even later when God, and we don't have time, but you can write down Deuteronomy 20, verses 10 through 13, and Deuteronomy 21, Deuteronomy 20, 10 through 18, and Deuteronomy 21, 10 through 13, God's people were allowed to marry people that were far away from Canaan. God gave them permission. He says, now these Canaanites and Perizzites and Hivites and these people in the land that you are supposed to be in, you don't marry them. But somebody far away, he says, well, if you go in and you capture them, he says, you can read this, Deuteronomy 20, he says, they've got to shave their head, these women, and they've got to cut off their nails, and they've got to grieve for a month, and then you can marry them. Why all that? I don't know. That's what the Bible says. But God allowed his people to intermarry, but they had to be from another place besides Canaan. And he was okay with that. Egypt, not in Canaan, is it? So God's okay with it anyways. And the whole purpose of not marrying the Canaanites was for what reason? Because they were going to turn your heart away, right? They were idol worshipers. And he says, don't marry somebody that's going to cause you to leave me and go worship an idol. That was the whole reason. He says, I don't want that. But Joseph had to get a wife. He had to be like an Egyptian. So that's how it had to happen. It says, so Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And we talked about this a little bit last week. Joseph was 17 when his brother sold him from slavery. So for 13 years of his life, life was difficult. Very, very difficult. You know, and a lot of times, what would we have done in that length of time? We'd give up on God, wouldn't we? God promised you, man, for 13 years, your life has been miserable. You've been a servant. You've been had to be in prison. You've done all, it's been rough. You've been accused of things that you didn't do. Joseph never gave up his faith. So he's 30 years old now. He's the second man in charge. That's young to be in charge, isn't it? You can't be president of this country at 30. So he's a young man still. Very, very young man. All right, it says, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh, and he went throughout all the land of Egypt. Egypt's a big place, isn't it? How long is this going to take? It's going to take a while, isn't it? Why is he going to go throughout all the land of Egypt? If you want people to follow you, it's election year. What is Joe Biden and Donald Trump going to do this year? They're going to go through all the land of the United States, aren't they? Why? They're trying to get followers. That's what they're doing. What's Joseph doing? He's trying to get followers. He is going to relay his message. The people on their campaign this year, they're going to relay their message, what they're trying to get accomplished. What do you think Joseph's doing? Hey, we got 7 years of famine coming, and during these 7 years of plenty, we've got to put it back. You guys have got to listen to me. 20% of everything that you get's got to be held back. Would that have been a hard message to receive? How many of you want to give 20% of what you've done because of something that may or may not happen? That'd be difficult, wouldn't it? It'd be difficult to come to your house and say, I need 20% of everything you've got, all these crops, because, you know, later on this... Does that take faith? That took some serious faith on the parts of the Egyptian. Yes, sir. Yeah. I know, but a lot of times what happens when success happens? 7 years of plenty, what happens? Your head gets bigger, right? And you think, oh, man, I'm doing good.
I'm doing good. I've got all this. I can sell. I can, you know, build, tear down my barns, build bigger barns. We've heard about that before, right? And, you know, sometimes that happens. So he goes throughout all the land of Egypt. Now in the seven plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and he laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea, until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. 7 years of a mighty nation storing up food, that's a lot. I mean a lot. All right. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of the famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of the priest of On, bore to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me to forget all my toil and my father's house. Now, let's talk about that for a second. Joseph has been through all these hardships. He's not been home in over 13 years, and he finally has a child. Now, when did he have the child? Was he 30? I don't know. He may have been 35 by the time that happened. But whenever he has this child, it's been a long time since he's been home. And he names his firstborn child a name that meant, God has caused me to forget my father's house. Now, if we take that at face value, do you think Joseph forgot his father's house? No. Do you think Joseph longed to see his father? He loved his father, didn't he? I mean, him and his father were tight. Did he love his younger brother Benjamin? Yeah. We're going to find that out a little bit later. I mean, so did he completely forget about his father's house? No. So we need to understand what is meant here. Later on, when his, and I know I'm getting ahead, but if you know the story, when his brothers came to Egypt and they are very sorrowful before him, what does he tell them? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for what? Good. Joseph has come to a point that when he names his firstborn son, he has realized. I think it's clicked. He understands that he is in the position that he's in for what God is going to bring to pass. And when you realize that you're in the position you're in because God wants you there, what happens? The bitterness of what got you there starts to disappear, doesn't it? Joseph has begun to realize that all of those hard days and all of those bad situations he found himself in were necessary. We said, you know, in days gone by, providence is, you know, you have to look at hindsight, right? And hindsight is what? 2020. That's what we say, right? When you look back at your life, you can see everything that brought you right here. And when you see that where you are is in a good place and God has brought you here, what happens to the bitterness that's behind you? It starts to go away, doesn't it? And you start realizing, hey, you know, I had to endure this, I had to endure that, and this was a hardship, but hey, it's made me who I am, and I am where I am because of all of that. So therefore, all of those bad things, you just kind of can put them in the back of your mind. And you can start putting them to bed, and you can start getting on with your life, and you don't allow those things to pull you down anymore. And so when Joseph finally had a son, that's what it caused him to realize. God has worked in me, and look at where I'm at. You think when Joseph was in that pit of a well waiting to be sold, do you think he ever imagined he was going to be second in charge of Egypt? No, but see, he realized now that what God had done. And we need to do the same thing in our lives. Realize why God has brought us here. Yes, sir.
You know, bringing this down, this lesson down to current times, we may be sitting, and we probably are, in a plan that God has for the will and the of Christ.
Yeah, you're exactly.
We won't know how when it's going to come to fruit.
That's true.
We're probably sitting in a plan right now that he has. All we've got to do is put there.
Trust the plan. Trust the one that made the plan. Thank you.